This episode is sponsored by FreshBooks. Go to freshbooks.com/TDI for your free 30-day trial.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of The Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Investors caught off guard with heaps of leverage. Markets tank, volatility spikes, and we have lots of listener questions. All this and much more on episode number 547 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Good morning, market correction. It's Andrew Horowitz. And wow, we've had two weeks actually that were uncharacteristic for what we have seen over the last several months. And it's got a lot of people asking questions, concerned, worried, and revisiting a lot of their ideas of how they're investing, their risk tolerance, their time horizon. I've gotten so many inquiries in, whether it's on Twitter, emails. A lot of people are really concerned right now, which is really interesting because if you think about it for a second, there was no concern for months. In fact, if you really start to really look back, look at all the things that didn't bother markets, whether it was geopolitical concerns with regard to Korea, North Korea in particular, political issues here in the United States, whether it was a budget impasse and the first government shutdown, whether it was the floods, the fire. I mean, there was so many things that actually were out there that could have spooked markets that didn't. And so many reasons that we could be looking at this, right? What happened here? A lot of people are trying to come up with all sorts of reasons for why did this happen? Why did we see such a violent move? Thousands of points reversing from the Dow, then 1,000 point reversing from the bottom up, the S&P dropping, the world getting crushed, the VIX spiking incredibly. Lots of things happening all at once, just out of nowhere. Like it's, you know, just, you know, we have a sunny day and everything is great. And all of a sudden out of nowhere, a tornado hits. Right? I mean, that's what it was like. So let's kind of take this back and deconstruct this a little bit and look at some of the reasons and the things that were going on involved in markets over the last several months and kind of say, you know, well, where are we now? And then where are we going? Or where do we think we're going? We're going to also talk about a lot of different reasons here, some very fascinating things that happen in the market, as well as get to your questions. So here's a couple of things that happened. If you remember back a couple of weeks ago, if you were listening to the DH Unplugged podcast, which I really encourage you to do so because we cover a different side of business and finance on that with myself and John C. Dvorak, I had said that, you know, it looked like there was something going on with regard to the volatility index, the VIX. It looked like that markets were plowing higher, but the VIX was actually holding and starting to nudge higher a little bit at a time. And I said, maybe it's a good time to start thinking about this. And lo and behold, we saw gold continuing to actually get some legs. The dollar was kind of dropped for a while, and gold for a while was really selling off. Then all of a sudden, a few weeks back, we saw that there was a resurgence in interest in gold and silver. Interesting. Now, at the same time, bond yields, particularly on treasuries, and we look at the 10-year often, were starting to rise. Slowly at first. There was good economic backdrop in the U.S. We had this tax cut and earnings were good. And, you know, all things considered, you would think that the Fed would be somewhat active next year, into 2017, 18, and into 19. And they were. They put a few different rate hikes in 2017. The plan was to do about three, maybe four, but probably three. But bond yields kept on rising. and there was a spike. Now, let me take you back. Let's kind of freeze right there and go backwards a little bit. Remember many months ago, probably even a year ago, I'll say it now. Oh, yeah, I was early. I had thought there's going to be a definite move in the yields on bonds, and then we're going to start to see an unwind of some of the extraordinary stimulus that has been put in place by all of the central banks over the last several years, and that would actually become a negative and a headwind. I also thought, and wrongly so, that the dollar would start to move up, but the dollar collapsed. Now, that was interesting because if you think of all the things that should have happened with regard to how a currency is priced compared to other currencies, the strong earnings here in the U.S., the beneficial taxes, the backdrop again of a very good and stable economic circumstance, the Fed saying they're going to increase rates, that all should have, in theory, moved the dollar up. But something, again, something in the background wasn't right. Now, this is, of course, hindsight is 2020, but there was something we've talked about this. Matter of fact, last week was a great example. We talked at length with our guest last week about, you know, really, why don't you think about being in some cash here and maybe looking for some opportunities. I've talked about the Spearman Index on, whether it was on Twitter or whether it was on DH Unplugged. Here, I talked about the overbought indicators that we haven't seen in some time that have been very substantial. But again, markets were just really good at ignoring all that information. So after a while, you're like, okay, well, we'll play along until we see some cracks. Now, those cracks, by the way, were very hard to get a hold of because it happened so quickly, out of nowhere, for no particular reason, except for maybe the fact that, yes, we saw a spike in bond yields right after the jobs report came out on that Friday about a week and a half ago. All of a sudden, the good news turned into bad news concept really played out because the concern was and is that what happens if rates go up? What happens if it becomes a better deal to put money in risk-free assets at a 3% rate of return or 4% rate of return? And how then do you value stocks? If the premise has been for such a long time that, well, stock valuations can be really high, and we look at the Case-Shiller and the CAPE ratio, the Shiller-CAPE ratio, where we said, wow, this is really high. Haven't seen this in I don't even know how many years. And then everybody's like, well, don't worry about that because you know what? Rates are low. And if rates are low, the valuation models that you put on stocks, it makes sense that if rates are this low, that the opportunity and advantage goes to being in stocks over bonds. Now, when that switches all of a sudden, and even though markets ignored that for a while, investors really are just like lulled into a sense of just zombieism, just buy the ETFs, just buy the broad-based markets, and everything was just levitating. As interest rates turned all of a sudden, many models had to reprice the valuations of stocks, and now we're saying, whoa, if interest rates continue to go higher, those valuations have to come back, and therefore maybe we should lighten up. So, okay, you see a lightening up. Was it really so much of a rise that we should have seen such a tremendous amount of selling that ensued very quickly? You know, the markets were down 5% last week. We saw from peak to trough from the 26th of January down about 12% on the Dow Jones, the NASDAQ a little bit more, and the S&P. We saw the VIX spike 100% plus last week. Now, okay, you got all that together, right? We have now. What do we do with that? How do we work with this? And again, how does it all tie together? So we know that that markets have a regular correction that comes about for a variety of reasons, at least maybe once, could be twice a year, and then you know we see that there is this kind of scary type of move that happens usually quickly. Oftentimes, corrections happen a lot faster than bull markets, right? You have a correction. It could be a quick move down by 8 to 12%, let's say, in a matter of weeks, where it took maybe a month and a half or 2 months or maybe 5 months to move up that much during a bull market. Well, now all of a sudden, things have changed. Over the last number of years, what we have found, and this is a very big culprit, and I'm going to tell you something, is something I've worried about for a long time, something I've talked about here for a long time, something you really need to pay attention to. This whole idea of absolute passive investing, of only going to the cheapest ETFs, and that's the way to play it for forever, you know, set it and forget it. This is a problem. This is why, in particular, in our global allocations over at Horowitz & Company, through Investology, why we use a mixture of active and passive inside each of those portfolios. Active investing for certain areas that are a little less efficient, and passive, primarily, but we use some active there too, for the areas that are more efficient. But the idea of putting all your money into ETFs that are passive, here's what happens. If everybody's doing that, and if everybody has the same idea, basically, as money is put into this ETF, and let's just call the S&P 500 ETF as the one we're going to focus on, what happens is that when you buy into that, you're not just buying an ETF. You're not just buying into a manager that can look at the markets and find the right stocks that they want to invest in. What you're doing is you're essentially investing in 500 stocks. And now take that and multiply that out. And what happens? You have a massive amount of money going into the S&P 500 that is just creating a levitation effect to all the stocks. Does that make sense? There's no discrimination upon what stocks you're going to be investing in. You're just investing in the 500 stocks, the basket, and that's it. Now, let's kind of go forward. Let's say, okay, this is going on for a few years and it's taken hold. More and more people are investing in the S&P 500 index. Less people are going into active managers. Less people are buying individual equities. Share buybacks are being done. There's less liquidity in the markets by a significant amount. And now we have less shares outstanding. People buying into an index. The indices rising significantly. And fewer and fewer people that will be discriminating in their purchases. Now it's time to sell. I don't know why, whatever the reason, selling happens. Now you have less liquidity. You have indiscriminate selling because now you're just selling your basket of SPY and the whole entire market moves down. Is this a surprise to anybody? So when you sell that SPY, 500 stocks are sold. And if you have big hedge funds that decided for whatever reason that, you know what, we'll play along, and they put billions of dollars into these index funds and they start selling, no longer are they just discriminating, saying, you know what, I think this stock over here is going to probably play out a lot better than that stock over there. Let's buy this one, sell that one, let's short this. No, it's just outright buying of everything. So what's happening is that we are seeing the actual long-term effects of a very, we'll call it, lazy way of investing, and how when that catches on and how you have now all of a sudden everybody lulled into a sense of just who cares, it's for the long haul, and I don't really worry about anymore because it's so easy just to pick up an S&P 500 index or the Dow index or whatever other passive ETF is out there, rather than doing any kind of real homework, investigation. And now the end result is, and I think we've talked about why this is a problem and why, in fact, I've pounded the desk so many times on checking out on looking at your risk tolerance, looking at what's going on in the world, and then also looking at your diversification. And why we created Investology. If you haven't gone there yet, by the way, quick plug on this. If you haven't done your risk level and your risk tolerance and time horizon questionnaire over on investology.com, you can just click any of the buttons that says, create your portfolio, craft your portfolio. What that does is it takes you into a questionnaire to go through what is an appropriate level of risk and how that portfolio should be created. I mean, those portfolios did pretty well relatively last week and the week before. You know, we're talking about where a market drops 5-6%, depending on what market it is last week. And it was a lot worse for a little while there till that last half hour run. You know, you're talking about portfolios that were down anywhere from 1.5% to 4% or so. Where markets, and that's the super aggressive portfolios that were down 4%. You know, you look at international markets were down 6%, 7% last week. And you see small caps and technology and individual securities got whacked. So the diversification process and how we actually create these portfolios with using active and passive was just, that is the way that you really should be doing things. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to always beat the market, but that's not really necessarily the game, especially if you're buying into the whole idea of, well, I'll just invest in an ETF. That whole idea is just to meet the market, just to get there. This whole idea of beating the market is something you need to throw out of your whole idea. That's not the game. Now, you may do that over the long haul during different market cycles, but, you know, again, that's not necessarily the game. But there's a lot more that happened last week. If you haven't noticed, we had a major, I'll call it a Six Sigma Black Swan event. I'm going to get to that in a second, but got a few more things and some housekeeping we need to do. And we're going to talk about the VIX. We're going to talk about how the market looked, some of the ideas and what happened with the markets. So just hang on to those thoughts. We're going to get there because I have some other things that we really need to get to in terms of what is going on with the underlying fundamentals of the markets, or I should say the mechanics of the market. That's what it is, the mechanics of the market. Something's different. You know what? Let's take a moment now and talk about our good friends over at FreshBooks. Because if you haven't checked out FreshBooks, this is pretty cool stuff. This is a, if you're an individual who you're working for yourself or maybe in a small company, and, you know, there's a lot of things that go into the daily grind of what you're doing, right? And, you know, you look at some of the things that are going on and you say, well, you know, things have changed over time. Technology has really helped me out a lot. But what am I doing about really giving myself a streamlined approach to how I'm actually operating in terms of invoicing, in terms of billing, in terms of, you know, making sure that my time management's there and looking at all that. And FreshBooks, what they did recently, by the way, with their new version, where they really went in and spent a lot of time looking how businesses work and looking to redesign in a way that fits a business's needs, is pretty cool. I spent some time on looking at all this and making sure that it really worked nicely. You could generate invoice with tracking. You have notes and reminders and client information there. And you can actually get a 30-day free trial, which I really encourage you to do, over at freshbooks.com/TDI. freshbooks.com/TDI. You can do things like estimates on projects and project management, and you can look at profit and loss reports, and it's all cloud-based. It's very easy to use. There's a lot of templates that are available for you. And it's done such a way that from what I went through in terms of, you know, if you were setting up the business to working on the ease of setting up like credit card processing or just simply tracking of time, really intuitive, really easy to use. So definitely go check it out, freshbooks.com/TDI. Now back to some of the things we're talking about with regard to markets and what's going on, what you need to do, and how you need to prepare. Where are we in relation? I mean, things felt pretty bad. And why they feel bad? Because, well, we're not used to it. We're not used to what we saw last week for some time. As a matter of fact, if you really think about it, I would bet that many investors, many people listening right now may have never really experienced a significant correction. The last time we had something, all right, 2011, we had something. 2016, a bit. Quickly undone. But the concern is, well, what happens if this lasts a lot longer? What do I do? How do I protect myself? How should I change things? So last week was about the 19th worst week. It's about the 18th, actually, before we rallied off those lows on Friday, but the 19th worst week for the S&P 500 total return index since about 1990. So that gives you where that is. Now, to put that in perspective for a second, back in 2008 in October, so an 18% drop. 2001 in September was about 11%, kind of go all the way down. 2009 in March, there was a 6.7%. Lots in 2008, 2009 here. 1999, negative 6%. Question is, and everybody wants to know, of course, you know, I mean, are we anywhere near this? Is this going to continue? One of the things we do know about corrections, they happen. Second thing we know is they're painful. Third thing we know is we have no idea how long or how deep. Nobody can tell you that. Yes, we did bounce off the 200-day moving average pretty well for the S&P 500. That is a key support level. We could probably draw some Fibonacci lines. Yeah, okay, that's good. Clearly, if you've been following me on Twitter, and that's something you should be doing because I do post quickly throughout the day, especially during times of weird market moves of what's going on. I had mentioned that our proprietary fear indicator, the fear and greed indicator, if you will, that looks at a substantial amount of underlying sentiment and key levels of market statistics, was flashing a negative seven. Negative seven. This was midday on Friday. Now, why is that important? It's important because I have never seen, not never, but in a very, very long time, have not seen a negative seven showing an oversold circumstance with the markets. And why is negative seven important? Our scale only goes to a negative seven or to a positive seven. And we've seen several positive threes, positive fours, and those are pretty substantial, positive fives. Overbought conditions can last a long time. Oftentimes we see an oversold condition that resolves itself somewhat quickly. Now, when I posted that, I didn't realize it was going to be a matter of an hour or so that we were going to see a 3% rise in the markets. But obviously others saw the fact that several different sentiment indicators, and you can pick your poison of what you want to look at, were just absolutely blown out. And again, I've only seen a negative seven, I think, three times in the last 30 years. So that was pretty substantial. And we went in and we added to positions, particularly on the NASDAQ Qs during that exact moment that we hit that negative seven. Took off a couple of short positions on the TDI Managed Growth Portfolio. Look for those that had some excess cash in other portfolios, in Horowitz Company portfolios. And, you know, we said, you know, this is a pretty interesting time here. And one of the other things that was really interesting was a gut check. Just a gut check. Thinking, oh, man, this is getting really bad. This is kind of getting scary. Those are always the times you want to really pick up on. Think about how you're feeling during all this. And oftentimes when things are going to a point that it looks like it's going to just collapse, it could, it's possible. But those are times you really need to start thinking, hey, what is going on here? Because I'm not the only one thinking this, and that's probably why things are getting so crazy. We did see the VIX do some crazy stuff, and this is a question that's come in, and this is an area that we really need to pay attention to what happened here, because this was bizarre. This, as I call it, this Six Sigma, this Black Swan event that we had on, I think it was Monday of last week, all of a sudden the markets were dropping, the VIX was rallying, and the short VIX ETFs were falling, which makes sense. Everything makes sense there. That all ties out pretty well. The problem was that after the close, markets started selling off again, and the VIX futures spiked to a point where they were up over 100% for the day. Now think about this. If you're short the VIX and the VIX goes up 100%, how much did you make or lose? Well, if you were long the VIX, you made 100%. If you're long the VIX futures, and they go up 100%, you make 100%. If you're short the VIX futures and they go down, they go up 100%, you lose theoretically 100%. And what happened was that after the close, a couple of funds, the SVXY ETF that is short the VIX and the XIV, which is another fund, there's a few others, that was short the VIX, started just dropping massively. And it didn't make a lot of sense at the time because we saw where the VIX was. But what happened is behind the scenes, there was a whole different movement going on and a repricing of these particular ETFs that was going on by the company on what they had from their exposure and people just getting out. And these funds collapsed close to another 70% or so, maybe even a little bit more than that, after the close on Monday. Ouch. It hurt. We took a small piece of that when it came down about 60%, thinking that's pretty much where it's going to go. They're heads down the other side. And again, not everything was clear at that moment. It wasn't clear at all what was exactly going on here. And in fact, it looked like some bad ticks. It looked like some fat finger trades, people just getting out and it was done. But what happened again was that it got so bad that it blew out these short volatility strategies. In fact, the XIV, which is run by Credit Suisse, is closing. They're done. Kaput. It's gone. We did some calculations, and about $3.9 billion was eradicated from that move after the close on Monday by about eight or so different funds that we looked at. Some of them were actually mutual funds. Some of them were ETFs. A lot of losses. That doesn't count the losses by individuals that had outright VIX options. That didn't count the VIX futures. It doesn't really count the hedge funds that had some kind of a short VIX position on. We're just talking about a few different funds losing almost $4 billion. That was a crazy move. That also set off some alarms because what happened is that as the volatility increased into Monday, and why we saw such an incredible amount of destruction done was that margin calls were going on. And what do I mean by that? And what was going on? Well, here's the second part of that whole discussion that we were having with regard to the ETFs and the low volatility and people just getting numb to any kind of thought that there would ever be a drop with markets. The amount of leverage that has been added to the markets, the margin, people taking a $100,000 account and buying $150,000 worth of securities and borrowing $50,000 from the broker to do so, has ballooned to the highest level ever. The first thing that goes when you are starting to see a crack in the markets and a drop in a correction zone is people need to deleverage. They need to get off of it because what's going to end up happening is they're going to lose double the money or whatever the multiplier is on how much they borrowed. And on top of that, what's going to happen is that there's going to be that excess that needs to be taken out, right? So when you look at this and realize that you're going to get margin calls and there's going to be this excess volatility and you're going to see that people are delevering, this is why we saw this snowballing going on. But in the end, we all like a very neat and tidy explanation of what's going on. Why is the market going up? Why is the market going down? How long is it going to last? What should I do? When do I get in? When do I get out? Very cut and dry is what we want, but it's not that easy. It isn't that easy at all. What we need to look at is the bigger picture. Step back for a second. Stop being so emotionally involved and worried about this in terms of course, yes, of course, be worried about it if you're going to lose money. I get that. But just for a second, let's step back. Take this for a time of realization that, you know, maybe I let my excitement about this get the best of me. Now, that could be said for if you did some panic selling. Because that's what we had, right? We get panic buying, we get panic selling these days. We get this FOMO and this fear. But at this point, realize that maybe if you feel a little bit like, wow, I can't take this. is volatility. Maybe you're not set up right. Maybe your portfolio is designed in such a way that maybe you put together and cobbled together all these different things, and maybe you need to do a new assessment of your risk and your time horizon. Put it together and think about, hey, if I can't handle this, which again was a very quick move to the downside after a glorious year, maybe I should rethink and readjust my overall interpretation of how I believe my risk is really set up in order to make sure that you have a very good line on the future. Because if you are set up in a way that is going to spook you in and out, what's going to happen? It's simply going to be a problem because you're going to get in at the wrong times. You're going to get out at the wrong times. Now, you can't help it sometimes. Yeah, you know, stock moves with you and you're like, oh, you know what? I like that stock and you don't buy it, but it keeps moving and you don't buy it. It keeps moving and it moves higher. You say, all right, finally, I'm going to put a little bit of money to work here. And then it comes back a little bit and you buy in the dips and all that. All right, you know, you may do things at the wrong time for the right reasons. But again, it's really important to understand where your own personal risk tolerance is. And of course, the forward projections of where you think that you'd be the most comfortable so that you don't make the wrong decisions. So yeah, the markets are vulnerable. We don't know how long this is going to last. And I'm not going to start to tell you, yeah, I told you already, okay, we hit some important and key levels on the markets and they bounced off pretty well. We don't know if that's going to fail on Monday or Friday of next week or in 2 weeks from now. Yeah, I mean, my judgment says from many years of doing this that the probability is going to be that with the big run-up that we saw on Friday, that the potential is that Asia may do a little bit better, at least not get crushed. And then that follows through to Europe, but possibly Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday or so, we're going to see a decent amount of activity on the buy side that people are going to say, oh, okay, the worst is over. You know, we'll start getting into more positioning or getting back into some positioning here. We see that when the volatility starts to abate a bit, that we'll see people going back in. And then possibly some scary further moves to the downside that will test our ability to hold on. And again, like I said, corrections happen very quickly. Now, is it a bear market? Is this an elongated? I mean, I don't know. The fundamentalists will say the economic backdrop and the earnings are solid. That's good. But when you look at things like the fact that and consider the fact that out of 440 companies, the S&P companies are now under their 50-day moving average. 250 companies are under their 200-day moving average. And you're seeing all these different oversold levels coming in. Well, okay, near term, that's something. But again, I really want you to focus on what's going on long term. We have algo trading that's going on that is causing a lot of problems, and because they can actually start moving against you very hard and they're designed to move technically. You have all this index trading, lack of liquidity, central banks pulling back potentially, less supply in the market, billions and billions of buybacks over the years that have created this condition of less shares out there. And now you have some fear and the potential for higher rates. All this is going into this whole issue. Now, I didn't even talk about the other part, and then we'll get some listener questions here. And then I also want to kind of make sure that I tell you what kind of, just to kind of put a fine cap on this, because I want to make sure you get something out of this week. I want to make sure that, you know, at the end of this, you're like, okay, now we talk, you know, I got something I could work with here. First of all, I talked about if you're not comfortable, you can't take it, do something. Change up and maybe get into a diversified portfolio. I'm going to keep on beating you over the head with this whole investology thing. If you haven't gone, I'll put a link on show notes for episode 547. I want you to check that out. But I didn't even talk about some of the other things that are also affecting this, right? What about what's going on in Washington? I mean, I'm kind of done. This whole idea that Republicans were supposed to be fiscally responsible, What happened? I mean, where are we here? Got a 700-page bill that was being used for the budget that was then giving us a short-term reopening of the government, or at least staving off a shutdown, an elongated shutdown, till was it March 23rd, I think it is? There's a 700-page budget bill, a new spending bill that was created on top of all this that was released to the Senate like a day before they had a vote on it, adding about $300 billion to the budget and lifting some of the debt limit caps, talking about now another $1 trillion worth of potential debt coming in and voting this in. A couple of them hemming and hawing, but generally speaking, voting it in. Now, if this happened under Obama, the Republicans would be beside themselves. I'm an equal opportunity slammer of either side, and I got to tell you something. This has gone too far. It's okay if we do it, pick your side, but not okay if they do it, pick your side. That's really what we're dealing with. And no wonder bond yields are higher, by the way. No wonder why the stock market is taking a beating. It's a terrible mess. No fiscal discipline or restraint. No understanding of what they're voting on. Just voting to get something done. Just get it done. Remember the last time the market saw a lot of this volatility? Well, in 2011, we had the Fed and the taper tantrum. 2008, 2009, when the government was coming to the rescue, when the government messed things up to begin with and allowed for all this to happen in terms of just terrible oversight and regulation of the banks. Government intervention, yes, can help. But when the governments get going, they can also really hurt things. And I think this is really the straw that broke the camel's back was the idea that we're now going to have a terrible rash of spending, inability to pay things back because of lower tax revenues that are going to be brought back into the Treasury and brought back in to pay for all these expenses for the, you know, for the military and all this stuff. And just, I think what happened here is that not only did bond yields rise due to the fact that the idea was, okay, which everybody talks about, right? Bond yields are rising because economic backdrop is good. Earnings are good. I agree with that. However, what else may make bond rates rise? This is important. People selling bonds. And why would they sell U.S. bonds? Because they've lost confidence in the country. They've lost confidence in the government. They've lost confidence in their ability to make sure that their balance sheets are solid. And I wonder, it's not being talked about too much, I wonder if that is what's going on. If China, if Japan, if they're saying, you know what, we're going to hold off on this because we look at this and this mess that's being created right now, you know, we're not really willing to put our money into that right now. They're being fiscally irresponsible. The numbers don't add up. Nobody's looking at what they're doing. And nobody's given us any kind of real projections on any of this. Nothing. So I think that's important. So here's something for you. Here's an answer to your question. Is the volatility over? Everybody wants to know that, right? I don't have an answer for you. Hard to say. However, I think not. I think it may abate for a little while here. That may give you a chance to pile in. But remember something, a lot of people piled in possibly a lot lower than you on a swing trade and are going to look to get out. And that's going to create more volatility on the backside, especially if we continue to see bond yields moving higher for whatever the reason is. VIX is elevated near 30, saying that a lot of people are projecting there's going to be volatility. And I just don't think necessarily right now, I could be wrong about this, but I got to tell you, it's not feeling that it's just going to be over with right now. Again, I think short term, we're oversold, we're overdone. There was a little bit of a craziness that went on there with trying to take down some of the excess leverage in the system. Okay, I got all that. And I think that will abate for a little while. However, I would not be surprised in the least, and I would not also be, I'd be insincere if I didn't tell you that I am setting up positioning for when things kind of roll back up a little bit, if they do, kind of start to hedge out some of this in the portfolios. I think it's going to play pretty well right now, or at least, again, I'm not saying it's going straight up or anything like that. I mean, I just think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I think it will be better right now. However, make it very clear, I do not think this is over. I do not think that necessarily we've reached a retest of where we're going. I am not saying it's going to be a 50% market drop that at this point. I'm going to hold that on the side and revisit that at a later point. But I also don't think we're long in the tooth here. Everything was pointing towards too much excess, and this needs to play out pretty well. And this is why I'm telling you, it is time to rethink however you want to do this, whether you want to work with us or not, I don't care. You need to rethink how you're investing right now. It's not going to be peaches and cream, I don't think, forever, like everybody was expecting in December and January. A lot of things have changed around the world. A lot of things are changing. So do yourself a favor and just spend a little time not reacting, but doing some planning. It's really time to have, I guess we'll call it, a correction game plan. Because you want to make sure that you're not sitting there, you know, the last guy holding the bag, the last gal that's sitting there going, oh, am I too late? So don't get sucked into the idea of just reacting here. Set up a plan for yourself. Work on your diversification. Make sure that you have all areas of the markets covered. If you want to pull up a little cash, that's fine. I have no problem with that. If you want to move more to bonds, I think that's smart. Short term, very short term, no problem with that. On an international basis, you know, domestic, international corporates, be careful on the junk bond area. Realize that has a high correlation to markets and stocks. Even though a lot of people would say they don't, they do. And be careful in terms of adding excess risk. Unless it's appropriate to your particular risk tolerance profile. If you're happy throwing your money in Bitcoin, I'm going crazy here, but if you're happy and you're content and throwing your money in Bitcoin and not worrying about the volatility, well, that's okay. That's fine for you. But if you're not and you're saying, you know what, I don't like this volatility. I don't think I can take this long term. It's not going to make me feel comfortable. You need to be comfortable because you make good decisions when you're comfortable. So put together, spend a little time, you know, get a piece of paper, get a pad, clean paper, clean desk, correction game plan, investment game. What are some of the things I need to do? Let me go look at my risk tolerance. Let me go look at my long-term situation. Let me go look at my portfolio, my old technology. Or do I have something else? You know, find somebody to work with. Use this time very wisely. Because it doesn't, you know, we've seen these peaks and troughs before. So anyway, I'll put a couple things on the disciplineinvestor.com website. I have a cool chart on these massive 200-point moves of the Dow Industrials throughout the week. Actually a couple days here. The 7th, 8th, and 9th in particular, how we saw these crazy moves. But we'll put that there. Let's get to some questions, some listener questions. Why don't we? And I got a lot of them here. Some of them I'm going to answer on email just for time. But this one's from Aaron. And he says, the U.S. yield curve seems to be starting to break from a multi-decade downtrend. If the trend changes, is there anything we can infer from this? Thanks. Yeah. I think that this is the whole point, right, Aaron? The whole point is the yield curve is starting to break from a down. Well, let me say this. The U.S. Treasury yields are, not the yield curve, U.S. Treasury yields are what is really breaking a downtrend, right? That's the important thing to look at. And that's the whole crux of the matter, I think, with markets right now. Everybody's getting very scared that we may see a skew event where all of a sudden it moves higher. And again, a repricing and revaluation of equities is important. Let's see. Here is more questions about debt and all that. And yes, debt. A lot of people. We have some questions in from. Who is this from? Ting Zhao. We got a couple questions, really good questions on the Fed and debt. I can answer that in an email. Andrew says, he asked me a bunch of questions. He says, all right, I'm going senile now. I also meant to ask you about the VIX and why is it so important? A few years ago, everybody was looking at the Baltic Dry Index, which now appears to be of no interest to anyone. Well, I think the big issue with the VIX was that it's been so low for such a long period of time, and everybody was wondering if it was a broken vehicle to look at in terms of understanding the risk profile of markets. And I think now that we look at it for a moment, we realize that once again, the same thing happened again that happens all the time. Complacency gets people nuts. They start doing things that they shouldn't do. Like every time that the VIX went up, they would short it. And that wasn't good enough. They had to start getting more aggressive and on margin and then doubling and tripling up. And what happened was that they were allowed to do so because regulators are stupid. They don't have any ability, it seems, to regulate ahead of time. It always has to be behind the curve. So the VIX is important because everybody was wondering about this and there was a lot of strategies that were tied to it. And again, a lot of questions were being asked if this is really a good fear gauge of the future of volatility of markets. Now, all of a sudden, there's a realization. That's why you're seeing it that, hey, maybe it does work. Maybe there was something wrong with the markets beforehand. Maybe there was something wrong with the underlying. So I think that's why everybody's kind of looking at that situation. Let's see here. Stephen B. wrote me, and he told me a bit about his portfolio. And he said he started investing this past year, he's lost 2/3 of his gains already. I guess that was just last week. And now it's having me reassess my risk tolerance. Now, this is who I'm talking to. Steve, you should have assessed your risk tolerance before you started investing, before you got more aggressive. And you didn't get just taken up by the excitement of it all. Because that's what happened, right? You got swooped up. You got, woo, man, look at this. I can make some money on this. Now, I'm not banging on you, but you all know what I'm talking about here. We got all excited about, I can make all this money in stocks and there's no risk. Again, I'm not picking on you, Steve, but I'm just saying in general. And we didn't look at, we got tired of doing the research and the work and we got, it doesn't matter. I'll take some tips from that guy and I'll listen to that guy and I'll read an article over here, even though I don't know who the source is, but he says it's good. I'm going to buy it. You know what I'm talking about. Come on. I know you're shaking your head. Yes, I know what you're talking about. So he asked if he's too heavily invested in equities and should increase his bond holdings. All these questions he asked me. And Steve, I can't answer that question for you. You got to answer for yourself. You got to find a good way or a good plan or a good advisor. And guys, do me a favor. I do not want to hear any more about, I'm not going to hire an advisor because I'm going to use a straight robo deal because it's so cheap, it's free. These went down. The betterment, the welfare, they all went down right when you needed them. These major websites were unavailable for use. So you get what you pay for. No advice because you're not paying them anything. It boggles my mind. You go into a doctor's office and, I'm going to this doctor because it's, it doesn't cost me anything. And what does he do? You don't even see the doctor. All you do is you walk in, you wait in the waiting room and somebody gives you a prescription for something. You're like, why is that? I didn't see a doctor. You don't need to see a doctor. What do you need to see a doctor for? You wrote down that you don't feel good. So somebody gave you a medicine. Silly. If you're going to go with a robo-advisor, at least get a hybrid. That's why we created this in Investology, I keep telling you. If you're going to do it on your own, at least think about bringing an advisor somehow. And go interview a bunch. That's okay. Go see what they're doing. But I'll tell you something. I got more thank you mails last week from my clients because we have them in a diversified manner that they didn't get hurt. All right, yeah, our aggressive, super aggressive stuff that's straight up and the market component of that, that got hit. That got hit. But again, we either had some hedging, we had some shorts, or we had reduced exposure because we thought saw things were getting a little out of hand. If you're trying to work a full-time job and at the same time follow all the different intricacies of markets, I mean, honestly, is that smart? Either you're not giving your full-time job the benefit of the doubt and you're not giving them benefit of your full attention, or you're not giving your investments your full attention. Which one is it? Can't have it both ways, right? Can't be full-time working somewhere else and trying to do this at the same time. Some guest requests here. A lot of questions about the Fed, which I answered. A lot of questions about the volatility of the VIX, which we answered. We got to go through these. All right, let's see what this one here. Here's a question from Rick, and he asks, thank you for all your nice comments. First of all, Rick, for all the nice things you mentioned at the first part, but we're not going to bore everybody with that. He says, it would appear that the overriding demographic trends would lead one to believe that the stock market would be up, would be an uptrend for the next 12 years or so. I'm sure this is an oversimplification. But looking at the baby boomers' need to generate income, the average boomer was born in 1952 and given a mortality of 78 years, it goes through this whole discussion. I'm not suggesting we won't have pullbacks or outright bear markets, but it seems that the larger trends are forcing the market up. And so notwithstanding a black swan event, it may seem that the place to be is in equities. What am I missing? You know what's great about this? He sent this to me at the end of January. And right after there was a black swan event with the VIX. And right after that, things rolled over. So while I tend to agree somewhat with your assessment, I definitely disagree with you in terms of the baby boomers and their need for income. That actually takes out of the economy. It slows down an economy. And with all the baby boomers retiring and the age demographic or the demographics of what we've seen in America and in Japan and the aging population, it's actually a net negative for the economy. So, I suggest, although some of these are a little bit hard in terms of their negativity of when we're going to have this boom or bust, some of the early workings of Harry Dent on demographic economics would be really good to check out. I think The Great Boom Ahead was written in, well, The Great, I think it's called The Great Boom Ahead. One of his earliest books really went through the whole S cycle and age, the demographic trends and all that. Very fascinating stuff. And if you understand that and you see where this all plays out, again, there is this whole idea that, you know, you're going to have good backdrop, generally speaking, but at the same time, you have to look at some of the overriding requirements and how people at certain ages impact the economic situation of a country. And therefore, you could kind of push that forwards a number of years and look at, well, we have this many people retiring now and this many people. Well, what happens? Well, net effect is that it's a negative on the economy right now. Stephen G. wrote me, he wrote me some time ago, so I'm pulling this out here. I don't know if I answered this or not. That's why I'm pulling it out here. He says, what do you think of the Japan Smaller Capitalization Fund? It gained nearly 37% in 2007 until it fell 14% in mid-December. And I, by the way, it continued down from there. It does appear to be rebounding. I will mention that I have been negative, even though there's a great discussion on why Japanese equities are underpriced and beneficial compared to a lot of other countries around the world, and how a lot of international investors prefer that because they're going to be on a, it doesn't seem like the Bank of Japan is ever going to be off of their stimulus move. So I'm just not a big fan of it. I think that when the stimulus breaks, like maybe happening now, it's going to be a bloodbath over there. It's going to be an absolute bloodbath. So you have to look at that as something that's at least concerning. And if you're in the small caps also, they had a great run. But I just do wonder that if we do see that there is some anticipation that, and more importantly, there's less trust and faith put in the central bank's ability because they don't have any ability to really control any of this. It's perception. And when that perception changes, and all of a sudden now the masses out there no longer believe that they have a central bank put, there in particular could see the hardest hit markets of all. It's my biggest concern would be Japan, because of the amount of stimulus that they have and the requirement on the amount of stimulus that they need to keep rates as low as they are. So keep a watch on that. All right, so I think there's a lot of questions I didn't answer there, because like I said, I answer them directly on email. What else do we got here? Let me see my notes for a minute. We talked about the VIX, SVIXI, and XIV. We talked about the markets and diversification, Washington, and how that impacts the investment landscape and what may be happening there. I did talk a little bit about the ranges, but I'll mention it again. We did see some crazy numbers like 1,700 points top to bottom on the Dow. That doesn't happen very often. And yeah, okay, it is a higher level for the Dow to begin with. But again, these ranges are pretty ugly. Some people were asking, actually, was it a flash crash when that 700 points moved down of the markets in a matter of a half hour or so earlier in the week? Flash crashes are a little bit more severe. I didn't see a lot of stocks breaking. It was a much more orderly move, which in a way is more concerning, right? If you have an orderly move versus a flash crash is a mechanical issue with the markets, whether it's a fat finger, whether it's something went awry, the algos went crazy. Whereas you have an orderly downstroke, that means there's a lot more intentional selling. That's more concerning. So you can recover from a flash crash a lot quicker, but intentional selling, that can be a problem. Because if there is that kind of determined intentional selling, markets will eventually roll back over and start making new lows. So do me a favor, please. Spend a few minutes on my Twitter feed, because I did put a lot of good information there on the negative 7 KRI indicator that we have, the key reversal indicator. And I mentioned about Spearman. I mentioned about a lot of different areas with regard to what to be thinking. Please go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. I want you to do that today, please, and check out the different strategies. Maybe you're thinking that it's... And if I were you, I'd be thinking this right now. Maybe if I'm in a long-only position, maybe I should hedge it out a little bit. And how does that work? Check out the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy. Maybe you're thinking, well, I got all these ETFs and I'm comfortable with kind of broad-based investing, but am I heavy in one area that really doesn't work with my risk tolerance? Again, go check out Investology. Investology starts at $10,000, by the way. $10,000 is all you need to start up with the Investology. It's all really cool automation that we set up, the best of the robo-advisors, but that's where it stops. And you get a actual advisor. We're crafting the portfolios along with you, creating these portfolios that align with your risk and all that. So cool stuff. Anyway, enough of the commercials. I just want to lay that out for you. There's going to be more coming on this whole Credit Suisse issue. We shorted that in the game over on DH Unplugged last week. Again, we come up with ideas each and every week on that. So check that out. And what else is going on? To Austin next week. Got to figure out how we can actually get the podcast out now that I think about it. Next weekend, going to Austin. Going to visit Adam Curry and Tina. I'm going to party it up over in Austin. Woo! You can listen to him, of course, on the No Agenda Show, which I love. And I don't know, other than that, send me your information, send me your questions. I look forward to hearing from you. Great to be a part of the family. Thanks so much. I'll see you next week.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations and differences can be expected. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.